ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। मार्गान्तियत्थे मुखपद्मनिदयेश षण्डासुपानैर्षयो विभक्ते यस्यागमर्षोडसदिद्वराय पदं पदं तीर्थपदा प्रपन्ना।
The lotus feet of the Lord are themselves the shelter of all places of pilgrimage. The great clear-minded sages, carried by the wings of the Vedas, always search after the nest of your lotus-like face. Some of them surrender unto your lotus feet at every step by taking shelter of the best of the rivers, the Ganges, which can deliver one from all sinful reactions. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Paramhamsas are compared to royal swans who make their nests on the petals of the lotus flower. The Lord's transcendental bodily parts are always compared to the lotus flower, because in the material world, the lotus flower is the last word in beauty. The most beautiful thing in the world is the Vedas, or Bhagavad Gita, because therein knowledge is imparted by the personality of Godhead himself. The Paramhamsa makes his nest in the lotus-like face of the Lord, and always seek shelter at his lotus feet, which are reached by the wings of Vedic wisdom. Since the Lord is the original source of all emanations, intelligent persons, enlightened by Vedic knowledge, seek shelter of the Lord, just as birds who leave the nest again search out the nest to take complete rest. All Vedic knowledge is meant for understanding the Supreme Lord, as stated by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita. Vedaischa sarver aham eva vedya. Intelligent persons who are like swans take shelter of the Lord by all means and do not hover on the mental plane by fruitlessly speculating on different philosophies. The Lord is so kind that he has spread the river Ganges throughout the universe, so that by taking bath in that holy river, everyone can get release from the reactions of sins, which occur at every step. There are many rivers in the world which are able to evoke one's sense of God consciousness simply by one's bathing in them. And the river Ganges is the chief amongst them. In India, there are 5 sacred rivers, but the Ganges is the most sacred. The river Ganges and Bhagavad Gita are chief sources of transcendental happiness for mankind, and intelligent persons can take shelter of them to go back home, back to Godhead. Even Sripad Shankaracharya recommends that a little knowledge in Bhagavad Gita and the drinking of a little quantity of Ganges water can save one from the punishment of Yamaraj. Hare Krishna. I am very grateful to be with all of you. This auspicious
holy place of Prayag, as we are gathering for the Kumbh Mela.
We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, entitled Vidura's Talks with Maitreya, Text 41. In this beautiful verse and purport, it is giving an explanation of what is a paramhamsa. There is a particular type of swan that only drinks nectar from the lotus flower. The lotus, Srila Prabhupada explains here, is the symbol of beauty within this material world. And Krishna, all parts of him are compared to a lotus because they are supremely beautiful. And Krishna manifests himself in many ways in this world. Especially it is focused in this verse through his words of the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the river Ganges. So those who are paramhamsas, they are not really concerned with anything except seeking shelter of the beauty, the grace of the Supreme Lord, through drinking the water of the Ganges and drinking the nectar from these holy scriptures and enchanting the holy names. When Ramchandra was living, or when he was traveling through Prayag, he proclaimed it Prayagraj, the king of all holy places. I was asked to speak something about the Kumbh Mela. I'd like to begin by briefly speaking some of the history of our own beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada's pastimes in Allahabad. We know of that historical event in 1922 when Srila Prabhupada was recently married, had a child, and his friend Narendra pleaded with him, "Come, there's a very great sadhu who is speaking tonight." Srila Prabhupada, his father would invite sadhus every night to their house. And so he wasn't so interested because there's so many different kinds of sadhus. He said, no, this one is really very special. So to please his friend, he went to this rooftop. The address was 1 Ultodunga Junction Road. And there, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada was sitting under the shade of a jackfruit tree, speaking from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada, who was then Abhay Charan, he bowed down along with his friends. And before even coming to sit down, he received an instruction. "You are an intelligent younger man. You should take the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the whole world in the English language." After some discussion took place, In his heart of hearts, Srila Prabhupada considered, this is a genuine holy man. The message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in good hands with him. And in his heart of hearts, Srila Prabhupada then accepted him as his eternal master, father, his spiritual master. The next year, in 1923, for business purposes, Srila Prabhupada relocated his family to Allahabad. And here he opened up the Prayag Pharmacy. And he found one very good doctor named Dr. Ghosh. And Srila Prabhupada convinced him that you be the doctor, close down your clinic, move into my pharmacy, and you diagnose people and then make a prescription for the medicines at this pharmacy. And in this way, we will work together. And it was doing quite nicely. And because Abhay was such a spiritual person of such dignity, he gained tremendous respect by everyone here. About 5 years later, in 1928, the Mahakumbh Mela was being celebrated at Prayag. One Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj, one of the senior most disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, came with a group of brahmacharis for the Kumbh Mela. He met with Abhay, came to Prayag Pharmacy, and our Srila Prabhupada immediately recognized him. This personality was so instrumental. Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj was a disciple of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who took sannyas from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And it was he that first met Narendra, Prabhupada's friend, and preached to him. And it was he that brought Narendra to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who later brought Srila Prabhupada there. So Prabhupada recognized him and was very happy. After the Kumbh Mela, Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj left six of his brahmacharis here to start a temple. The leader was Atulananda Brahmachari. One day, Atulananda Brahmachari came to the Prayag Pharmacy asking Srila Prabhupada for some help. And he found out that they actually was opening a center. So our Srila Prabhupada, who was then Abhay, he would regularly go there. And they were fascinated to see. When they were singing kirtan, Prabhupada picked up the mridanga and could play like nobody else could play. And soon, not only was he their main mridanga player, but he was leading kirtans, and he was speaking so beautifully. In this way, Srila Prabhupada lived in Prayag, year after year, performing his family duties and helping his guru's mission. 1932, in the month of Kartik, he heard that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was taking thousands and thousands of people on a parikrama of Brajbhumi. So Srila Prabhupada took a train to join them. And he met his guru at Koshi. Their people were gathered. And there was an announcement that they were going on a trip to a holy place, Sheshashayi, and everybody who wants to go should please come. And at the same time, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would be speaking.
So only a few people stayed for his speaking. And he spoke for hours and hours and hours, and Srila Prabhupada with Sridhar Maharaj and a few others just sat. People were coming and going and coming and going, but he listened. He said he was speaking such high language and such high philosophy. But he felt completely at home in the shelter of his guru, sitting at his lotus feet. About a month later, here in Allahabad, Atulananda Brahmachari came to Srila Prabhupada's shop and told him that we are going to be having a cornerstone laying ceremony for a new temple we will build. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur will come. And I'd like to recommend you for initiation. So it was here at that event where they were beginning the Sri Rupa Gaudiya Math that Abhay was brought before Srila Saraswati Thakur and was recommended for initiation. Saraswati Thakur looked at him and said, "This boy, he likes to hear. He does not go away. And someday he will be good." Because he would say, one who is expert at hearing will be an expert in speaking. And it was here at the Sri Rupa Gaudiya Math in Prayag that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave Srila Prabhupada boast the Harinam and the Gayatri Diksha and added the name Aravinda, lotus, to his name, which became Abhay Charanaravinda. That was in 1932. Things happened with his pharmacy, and Srila Prabhupada left his family here in Allahabad and shifted to Mumbai, Bombay. There, almost immediately, two of his godbrothers, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Dev Maharaj and Bhakti Sharanga Goswami Maharaj, had come to start a temple in Bombay. And Srila Prabhupada was right with them, going house to house, having kirtans, giving talks, generating interest. In 1935, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was invited to Bombay to install the deities. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada wasn't present during this conversation. But Bhakti Sharanga Goswami Maharaj told Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that this Abhay Charanaravinda, he's the main person who established this temple. His preaching, his kirtan, his organization, his networking with people, he has inspired so much interest. He should be the president of this temple. And his Guru Maharaj replied, "Let him be as he is. He will do everything in due course of time. There's no need to recommend him for something else." And when his godbrothers told him this, Srila Prabhupada took those words so deeply and reflected upon them within his heart. While his family was in Allahabad and he was in Bombay, was that famous Vyas Puja of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where Prabhupada read a beautiful poem, Adoryi, Adoryi. And within it was one stanza, absolute essentient thou hast proved, impersonal calamity thou hast removed.
When that was read to his Guru Maharaj, Srila Saraswati Thakur, he was so pleased. He would read it out to so many people in so many places and say that Abhay Charanaravinda has really understood the essence of what I have come to give. Whatever he writes, publish it. Soon after, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur became quite ill physically. Srila Prabhupada wrote him a letter. It was in 1936. That you have so many disciples who are brahmacharis, who are sannyasis, who are fully giving every bit of their energy in your loving service. I'm a family person with an occupation and a family to provide for. I'm not able to do what they're doing. How can I serve you? About 2 weeks later, Srila Prabhupada got an answer with the same instruction he received in 1922 at their first meeting. Share the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the people of the English language and spread this mission all over the world. And soon after that, in Jagannath Puri, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada departed from this world. That was his first and last exchange with his Guru Maharaj. The same order. In 1965, Srila Prabhupada, who was living at the Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan, left his most auspicious, holy, comfortable home, went to Bombay, actually just a few days ago I was in Agra, and I was remembering this incident. Srila Prabhupada was, while he was living in Vrindavan, he gave a talk at a Mr. Agarwal's house. And afterward, the two of them were sitting and talking, and Mr. Agarwal was in great anxiety. He expressed it to Srila Prabhupada. He said, "My son, Gopal, he left India and went to America chasing after materialistic things, got his degree in engineering, and then got trapped by an American woman. And now he will not come back to India. He wants to live in America." He was asking Prabhupada for some blessings or some guidance of how to get his son back. Srila Prabhupada replied, "Oh, he is in America? Can he sponsor a visa for me?" He was meditating on the order of his guru constantly. Mr. Agarwal was shocked. He didn't say a word, and Prabhupada never brought up the subject again. But some months later, somebody came with a message from the American embassy that he had a sponsorship for a visa. So he took this as Krishna's will. He went to Mumbai. Sumati Mararji, who was the managing trustee of the Srinathji Temple of the Pushti Marg of Sri Ballabhacharya, she gave Srila Prabhupada, was lecturing at her house regularly at Juhu. And she gave him a free passage on a cargo ship, the Jaladuta. And there, after 38 days at sea, heart attack, seasickness, and so many difficulties,
He lived in Butler, Pennsylvania for some time, about a month, then to New York City. He struggled alone and eventually established a little storefront and a few followers. In 1970, he brought about 40 of his devotees from various parts of the world to India to establish in a wonderful way Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement throughout. And very soon after they arrived, in January of 1971, was the Ardh Kumbh Mela. Every 12 years is a Maha Kumbh Mela. Every 6 years is the Ardh Kumbh Mela. And every year is the Magh Mela. Srila Prabhupada explained how important it was that they all go there. Somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, we have heard that if someone bathes in the confluence of the Ganga, Yamuna, Saraswati at the time of the Kumbh Mela, that they will get liberated. Is that true? Srila Prabhupada said, yes, it is true. One will get liberated from all one's sins. But that is not the reason we are going. We are not concerned with liberation. If we are chanting the holy names and engaging in the service of the Lord, we are already liberated. We are going to share this message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with everyone. We are going to preach. That is our purpose. Now, while they were in India, the devotees were staying at life members' houses at that time. And when they came to Kumbh Mela, that year it was extremely cold, extremely foggy. And they didn't have this electricity like we have now. Everyone was just living in little tents. There was about 50. Millions and millions of people there. And Srila Prabhupada was very excited. And his disciples explain how it was so cold in the early mornings. They were having Mangal Arti. And many of them were not coming. They just wanted to stay in their sleeping bags and be warm. And Srila Prabhupada says, why are they not coming? So they are too cold. Srila Prabhupada didn't say anything. But at 4 o'clock in the morning, he himself, even though he was not in good health, he was so old, he would go to the Ganga or to a pump and take an ice cold bath and be there for the program. And by that example, every single person was out of their sleeping bags, took an ice cold bath, and was present for the Mangal Arti. Every evening, morning and evening, Srila Prabhupada would speak. In the mornings, he would speak in English, in the evening in Hindi. He was speaking from the Srimad Bhagavatam, sixth canto, the story of Ajamil, and was especially focusing on the importance of the chanting of the holy names. We all know the story of Ajamil. He was born an elevated Brahmin birth, but due to the wrong association, he completely neglected his spiritual responsibilities, became totally addicted to greed, to envy, to lust, to anger, and was totally in illusion. But because of his past good deeds, at the moment when he was about to die in his old age, he called out his youngest son's name, Narayan. And in doing so, remembered Narayan and became completely liberated of all his sins and was given the chance to perfect his life, which he did. Here in Kumbh Mela 1971, Srila Prabhupada was describing from Jiva Goswami's works the glories of the holy name. That one, when one actually realizes the grace of the holy name, the name will manifest Krishna's unlimitedly beautiful form. The name will manifest Krishna's unlimited, transcendentally attractive qualities. The name will manifest Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual world. Krishna's love, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's abode of Vrindavan, everything could be manifested if we chant the holy name seriously, without offense. Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. That the name of Krishna is none different than Krishna. There is no other religious ritual or formula that is required. In the path of bhakti, all other spiritual rituals are simply meant to ultimately put us in the proper consciousness to humble ourselves before the holy name as we, from our heart of hearts, chant. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Therefore, this Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for all humanity. And it is the supreme gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to all the world. The devotees were telling Srila Prabhupada about the different kinds of yogis they were seeing at the Kumbh Mela. Some people were laying in beds of razor-sharp thorns from sunrise to sunset. Some were in a particular, very difficult yoga asana all day long. Some were kind of buried underground. They asked Srila Prabhupada about these yogis. Srila Prabhupada said that there are some, he said, I have seen some of these yogis. They bathe, they go down in the Ganga, in the Himalayas, and they come up at Prayag. Then they go down at Prayag, and they come up at the Godavari. Then they go down in the Godavari, and they go in the Krishna River. He said, these are mystics. You do not know who they are. Some are hundreds of years old. Srila Prabhupada said, be careful to offer respect to everyone here. But he explained that our purpose is not mystic powers. Our purpose is not even liberation. Our purpose is simply to chant the names of Krishna, develop love of Krishna, and share this love for Krishna with everyone. That was 1971. Although there were so many speakers and so many yogis at Kumbh Mela, so many pundits and scholars, Srila Prabhupada had his devotees go on Harinam Sankirtan. First time they've ever seen this. And Srila Prabhupada personally led the kirtan party. He went out with the devotees and they were singing and dancing, and that took the whole Kumbh Mela by storm. Everyone was enchanted. They were enthralled. People of India had never seen this before. Boys and girls from all over the world were chanting in the streets of the Kumbh Mela, loudly, sincerely crying out the names of Krishna. Hundreds and hundreds of people were coming to Srila Prabhupada's classes every morning and every evening. In 1977, Srila Prabhupada was very ill. But still, there was a Kumbh Mela, a full Kumbh Mela. So Srila Prabhupada, even though his disciples were saying, no, no, it is too cold, you should not go, Srila Prabhupada came here. And very briefly, when he arrived, he found that it was quite a bad location. And when it came for serving prasad, not only to the devotees, but to the people in general, there was hardly any bhoga or food to cook. Srila Prabhupada was extremely strong. He said, we must serve nice prasad to everyone. Why you're so busy thinking about yourselves? Why did you not arrange prasad for everyone? He said, you go, you spend 5 rupees to go to a market, you spend 5 rupees to come back from the market, and you spend 1 rupee to get some vegetables. This is your disease mentality. There should be plenty for everyone. And it was here in Allahabad, when Srila Prabhupada saw how the devotees were so irresponsible in this regard, he wrote a famous letter. I remember where I was in America when that letter came. It was so strong. He wasn't just talking about Prayag, but it inspired by the lack of prasad at Kumbh Mela. He wrote that every single temple worldwide must have wonderful prasad for every person that comes to the temple. It was his order. He said you should have puris, sabji, halava, pakoras. Minimum, sabji, puri, and halava. He said you should have first-class cooks at every temple, and they should cook for 20 people, and there should be enough first-class prasad for 20 people, and as soon as that's running low, the cooks have to cook for another 20 people. And if that's getting low, cook for another 20 people. This must be our standard. And if there's anything left when the temple closes, then the devotees could finish it. That was how strongly Srila Prabhupada believed in the distribution of prasad. That is how deeply Srila Prabhupada believed in the sanctifying, purifying effects of prasad. And also, he was trying to teach us the actual spirit of Vaishnav hospitality. Srila Prabhupada said, if anybody comes to our temples, we shouldn't just think they're a person coming. We should see that Krishna has personally inspired them to come. They are Krishna's guest, and we must serve them nicely. So Srila Prabhupada was lecturing and taking his baths here at Prayag, and his health was dwindling. And one of his devotees, Rameshwar Swami, said, Srila Prabhupada, please let's go. Your health is very much being afflicted here. And Srila Prabhupada said, he said, the Kumbh Mela is a religious conference. It's not just a place to bathe, it's a religious conference. Where leaders of all the various religious movements come together to give association. And Srila Prabhupada said, this is the greatness of India. Even though there are so many material distractions, still, the Kumbh Mela shows that spirituality is still the prominent concern of the people of India. But he expressed his concern how this material distraction was increasing more and more and more. And he quoted King Yudhisthira's beautiful verse to Vidura, Bhavadvida Bhagavatas Tirthakur, that the true purpose of going to a holy place is not just to bathe in the rivers, but to seek out the association of holy people and to hear from them. Rameshwar Swami told Srila Prabhupada that here you're preaching to some thousands of people, but your books will speak to millions and millions and millions of people for many generations to come. So let us go to a warm place so you can translate and write your purports. Bhuvaneshwar is a good place because you wanted to go there. So from here at Kumbh Mela, Srila Prabhupada, for the sake of what was most favorable, to show compassion to all, he went to Bhuvaneshwar, where he lived in Srila Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj's little straw hut and translated his books. The history of Kumbh Mela is graphically explained in the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. May I share some of what is coming to my mind this time? The story begins where Shukadev Goswami is telling Parikshit Maharaj different descendants of great personalities. And he explains that one Vairaja had a child named Ajita, who was the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, who manifested the form of a tortoise in order to hold the Mandara mountain for the purpose of the churning of the ocean of milk. And he was about to go on with the descendants, but Parikshit Maharaj said, please tell me about this churning of an ocean of milk. Mandara Mountain was the churning rod. Please explain to me. This story is so instructive on so many levels. Please listen very carefully. It begins where there was a battle between the Suras and the Asuras. And Indra, the chief commander of the demigods, he was riding on his elephant. And he came upon Durvasa Muni, great sage, an expansion of Shiva. And Durvasa Muni wanted to bless Indra. So he took off his garland and offered it to Indra. But because Indra was so powerful, he was so famous, he was so beautiful and extremely wealthy, he was proud. Queen Kunti, she warned that the greatest disqualifications for our spiritual life is too much wealth, too much beauty, too much education, and a high birth where fame comes. Because these qualities tend to make one proud. When one is proud, one inevitably makes apparads or offenses to others, and one cannot humbly from one's heart cry out the names of the Lord. This was the situation of Indra. He was not grateful for what he received. Sometimes you receive so many things when you're in a high position, you're not grateful for little things that come. They become like a botheration to you. So here's the blessings of Durvasa Muni. And Indra took the garland, and he wasn't thinking of anything. He just, okay, another garland. And he put it on his elephant. And the elephant, it's an animal. He doesn't understand the value of a Mahaprasad garland. So he took the garland and put it between his legs and crushed it. Durvasa Muni, for Indra's own sake, he cursed him. That because you're so proud of your wealth and power, you will lose everything. And because all the other demigods were connected with Indra, they all lost everything. At the same time, Bali Maharaj, he did such nice, humble service to please his guru, Shukracharya, that he was blessed. So the demons were blessed by the sages, and the demigods were cursed, so the demons conquered the demigods. The demigods were homeless, bereft of everything, humiliated. There was nothing they could do except run to Lord Brahma and tell their predicament. So Brahma brought them to the shore of the ocean of milk, where they prayed to Lord Vishnu. And after those beautiful prayers, Lord Narayan appeared, and he spoke to Brahma and Shiva and the Devas. He said, now, because time is on the side of the demons, better you not fight with them. You will lose. Make a truce. And this is how you should make a truce. Tell the demons that together you should make an alliance for the purpose of churning the ocean of milk. If you take the Mandara Mountain, use the serpent Vasuki as the rope. If you churn Amrit, nectar will rise. The nectar that even if a dying man drinks will gain immortality. But I warn you, as you're churning, the first thing that will come out is poison. Don't be afraid. Lord Shiva will save you. After that, jewels. The most beautiful, opulent things will be coming out. Do not be attracted to any of it. Keep your mind completely focused on the goal of the nectar. Don't be greedy. Don't be fearful. Don't be angry. Don't be envious. Just churn with patience, and the nectar will come. So Indra went to Bali Maharaj, and they spoke together, and Bali Maharaj immediately accepted. And they all lifted up the Mandara Mountain. But this mountain was the highest mountain in the universe. And it was made of gold. So all the demigods and all the demons are lifting in them, but it was so heavy, it was breaking their arms, and some of them were being crushed, and some of them were being killed. And ultimately, all they could do is cry to Krishna to save them. And Lord Vishnu again appeared and effortlessly lifted the Mandara Mountain and put it on Garuda's back, transported it to the ocean of milk and placed it down. But Vasuki wouldn't come because Garuda was there. So Ajit Narayan told Garuda that you must go. So Garuda offered his pranams and left. And then Vasuki came. They wrapped it. He was the churning. The king of serpents was going to be the rope. So Ajit, Vishnu, on the side of the demigods, he took the head side of the serpent, and the demigods followed him. The reason he did it is he knew that the head of the serpent is a really dangerous place, and the tail is not dangerous at all. So he wanted to, you know, control any difficulty that may come. But the nature of the asuras, the nature of material consciousness, is envy. They were saying, why are you taking the head? Why are you making us take the tail? The tail is low class, the head is high class. Don't you see, we are great scholars, we are pundits of the scriptures, we have all good character, we are warriors, we are heroic, we have all good qualities. They went on strike. So unless you give us the head and you take the tail, we are not going to participate. Lord Vishnu didn't say anything. He just went over to the tail, and all the demigods went to the tail and they started churning. As soon as they started churning, the mountain began to sink. Lower, 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 lower in the ocean, and they couldn't hold it up. What to do? So they cried out for Krishna to save them. And Vishnu, Ajit, manifested a most incredible incarnation. Kurma. A transcendental tortoise. Not an ordinary tortoise. The diameter of his shell was 800,000 miles. You may say impossible. But what a small mind to think that the Lord cannot do that. He's created this entire universe just by a single thought. He is a Chintya Shakti. He could do anything. He's created the sun planet. He's created the moon planet, all the planets. He's created unlimited universes. So if he personally, and that's just by his energies, if he personally wants to be a big tortoise, Keshavadrita Kurma Sarida Jaya Jagadisha Hari Jaya Jagadisha Hari Jaya Jagadisha Hari Keshavadrita Kurma Sarira Jaya Jagadisha Hari Jaya Jagadisha Hari Jaya Jagadisha Hari. And he just moved underneath the Mandara mountain and put it on his back. And he became the foundation. And then they began churning again. And as they were churning, this gigantic mountain, God, we cannot even estimate its weight. It was all resting on his back. And as they were churning it and was moving, he felt, by his own sweet will, an itch on his back. And the mountain was scratching it. So he felt very nice. From there, as they were churning, massive burning hot flames poured out from the mouth of Vasuki because he was hot getting churned like this. And the poor demons, they were like covered with black and they were all burnt and their hair was shriveled and... So what to do? So Vishnu, by his causeless mercy, he created showers of cooling rain and cool breezes to make Vasuki satisfied. Then they churned again. As they were churning, bubbling out from the ocean was massive, unlimited qualities of Halahala, which was the deadliest of all poison, Kutahali. This poison was spreading throughout the entire universe. It was on the verge of exterminating all life. They were helpless. Again, they turned to Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu said, let us go to Lord Shiva. So they all went to Mount Kailash, where Lord Shiva resides. And there, they prayed to Lord Shiva. You are the most merciful. You are supremely kind. You are the Pashupatinath. You are the Lord of all living beings. Please save us from this poison. Don't you see it spreading everywhere? Mahadev turned to his consort, Bhavani, and said, it is the duty of a person with compassion to undergo all sorts of risks and inconveniences to help those who are suffering. Everyone is in need. See their situation. The topmost way to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to endure difficulties and sufferings out of compassion to others. And he asked his wife Parvati for permission to drink all the poison. And knowing the power of her husband, she gave her permission. And Lord Shiva, by his mystical powers, he took all that poison and condensed it into the amount that fit into his hand. Can you imagine that concentrated poison? He drank it. And as it went into his throat, it made a blue line in his throat. His name is Kalakanta or Nilakanta, because that blue line is one of the great ornaments of Lord Shiva, indicating how he is Paradukaduki. His supreme compassion. The happiness of others is his happiness, and the suffering of others is his suffering. After he drank the whole ocean of poison, and some little tiny parts of drops fell, and that's where all snakes, scorpions, and poisonous plants got their poison from. Again they churned. The next thing that came out was a cow named Surabhi, who could give unlimited quantities of pure milk. And Surabhi was given to the great sages for the performance of their yajna. The next thing that came out was a beautiful horse, Uchai Shava. And that horse was given to Bali Maharaj to be his carrier. They churned again, and an incredible elephant emerged, Airavata. And that was given to Indra. Again, they continued churning. The Kostubamani, the celestial divine jewel, emerged from the ocean. And that was given to Ajit, Lord Vishnu, to wear on his neck. They churned, and so many things were coming. The apsaras, the parijata flower. And finally, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, emerged from the ocean of milk. And she was so beautiful, she hypnotized everyone. She was looking for a husband, and everyone wanted. But she went to Lord Narayan, and there was a beautiful union of Lakshmi Narayan. And seeing that the demons really wanted her but couldn't get her, the next thing that came out of the ocean was Varuni, the goddess of intoxication. And she was given to the demons, and they were very happy. And they churned and they churned and they churned. And ultimately, the moment they all waited for, a beautiful form of Vishnu appeared from the ocean. His complexion was blue, like a blue lotus. Beautiful, large, lotus-like eyes. Very strongly built, his neck was like had the swirls of a conch shell. He had a broad chest and long arms. He was wearing a beautiful golden crown and pearl earrings. His cloth was yellow like the flashing of lightning. And in his hands was a golden pot filled with nectar. As soon as he emerged with that pot of nectar, the asuras ran and grabbed it out of his hands and ran away. Srila Prabhupada quotes Srimadvacharya that Narayan could have stopped them, but he allowed them to do that, to allow the pastime to unfold. And so many lessons. When the demons stole it, the demigods were completely depressed. We already lost the battle, and we did this to try to get some strength, and now they're going to have thousands of times more strength, and we're not going to have anything. So they went to Lord Vishnu, and Vishnu just smiled. He said, "Don't worry. They will be so envious and so greedy that they won't allow each other to drink the nectar. Just be patient." So the demigods were watching, and one of the demons said, "I am foremost among all of us. I will have the honors of drinking first." And another demon ran and grabbed it and said, "No, I am superior to you. I will drink it first." Another grabbed it from him and said, "I am the greatest of the scholars. I am the greatest heroes. I will drink it first." Another grabbed it from him, and they were fighting over the nectar. And with all their powers, each and every one of them was not allowing any of the others to drink it. And nobody would allow them to drink it. So nobody was drinking it. They were fighting. It was going from one hand to another. And some of the weaker asuras, who knew they didn't have a chance, they were crying out that we made a deal with the demigods. Everyone would get it equally. So we should share it with the demigods. We gave our promise. Everyone should get equal. See, this is their own. They would rather have the demigods have it than their own people. That was their envy. So they were fighting and fighting and fighting, and those other people, the strong ones, you weak ones, what are you talking this nonsense philosophy for? It's mine, I deserve it. They could have all had it. But they were so attached to this pratishta, this prestige. It's not that one wanted to drink all of it. Just wanted the first honors. Nobody could get it. At that moment, Lord Vishnu manifested the form of Mohini. She was very beautiful. She was the absolute truth, the all-attractive personality of Godhead in a female form. And as soon as the demons saw the nectar of her beauty, they kind of forgot about the nectar in the pot. she was so expert. She looked at each and every one of them with a glance that told them, I love you. And each of the demons, the weak ones, the strong ones, they all thought, she loves me. So convinced that she loved only him, they all unanimously agreed, let's give the nectar, since we can't, none of us could drink it because we're fighting over it, let's give it to her and she could decide who gets it. And she'll definitely give it to me because she loves me. They're all thinking like that. So they said, here, you take this nectar and you give it to whoever you want to give it to. They were acting very detached. And she told them right out what the situation was. She said, you don't even know who I am. You don't know what family I'm coming from. I'm just a stranger. Why are you putting your trust in me? You shouldn't trust a stranger like this. And they said, oh, you are speaking so funny words. Please take the nectar and give it. So she said, all right, I will give it to whoever I want. And each one was just waiting. They knew. They were 100% convinced that they were going to get it all. Each one. And she just went over to the demigods and started pouring it in the mouths of the demigods. And the demons were seeing this. Why didn't they go over and try to stop? Because they thought she loved them. And they didn't want to disturb their relationship with her. Only Rahu, he disguised himself in a demigod and stood before Chandra and Surya and put his head up, and then he drank. But then Surya and Chandra said, that's Rahu, he's disguised. And Mohini Murti, she did her chakra lila. So the nectar was in his head, but never went down. And his head became immortal. So in this way, the Lord, Kauntiya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati, he always protects his devotees. But he doesn't always do it according to our master plan. He does it according to what's ultimately best for us. And this churning of the ocean of milk, incredible story. Because in our sadhana, it's like churning. The nectar of Krishna Prema is within all of us. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sravana Dijai. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajya Kabunoi Sravanadi Suti Chitti Kodike Yodoi. That love for Krishna is within the heart of everyone. By chanting the holy names and associating with great souls, that love is awakened. So as we are Sravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, it's like churning. And many of us have the experience that one of the first things that comes out is poison. Anarthanivriti. All of these unwanted desires, lust, anger, envy, arrogance, greed, illusion. So much, we only see what comes to the surface, but there's a whole ocean of it inside. And it comes to the surface. Srila Prabhupada used the example, as we're hearing and chanting, following devotional service, it's like boiling butter to make it ghee. The impurities come to the top, and we start seeing it like we've never seen it before. But if we just keep on chanting, we just keep, if we follow the regulative principles according to Vaishnav culture, Trinadapi Sunichena Taror Ibasishna, Amani Namanadena Kirtaniya Sadahari, then the impurities come out and they're scraped away by Krishna's grace. And in the same way, as we practice devotional service, besides the poison of impurities coming out, where we have to take shelter of the Lord and take shelter of the name at that time, many temptations will come. Prestige, wealth, honor, abilities, knowledge, these things may come. And if we become attracted to become attached to any of it, we will not get the nectar.
Vyavasayatmaka budhir ekeha kudunandana bahushaka hyanantascha budhayo vyavasayana.
Krishna tells those who are on this path are resolute in purpose. Their aim is one. The aim is prema bhakti. The aim is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant in all situations.
Arnamacharya Haridas Thakur explained the only true goal of the chanting of the holy names is the awakening of love of God.
Anyabilashita sunyam jnana karmanyakam.
That we are not concerned with heavenly treasures. We're not concerned with mystical powers. We're not concerned even with liberation.
We simply want to serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure in a favorable way with love. That is the goal.
And if we fix our mind on that purpose and chant the holy names according to Srila Prabhupada's divine guidance, then the nectar will come.
While the demons were taking away the pot of nectar from Dhanvantari, it is described in different ways in different places, but some drops fell of that nectar in four places.
Prayag, Haridwar, Nasik, and Ujjain.
And every 6 years, a portion of that nectar, according to constellations, they make like a pot, and the water emerges from the bottom and comes from the astral level, and that nectar emerges and it fully manifests every 12 years during the Kumbh Mela. So since this time, with faith in the scriptures and faith in the acharyas, tens and millions of people come to celebrate the nectar of the Lord's grace and come to bathe in the nectar of the Lord's grace, because that nectar is the nectar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dhanvantari. And these two holy rivers, the river Ganga, when Vamana Dev pierce the covering of the universe, the water from the causal ocean manifesting from the body of Vishnu washed his feet and was the most sacred of all treasures of the heavenly worlds. And the son of the descendant of Maharaj Sagar, Bhagirath, through his tens and thousands of years of tapasya at Gangotri, brought the Ganga down into the matted locks of Shiva. And then he monitored the flow of the Ganga to come to the earth. And Yamuna, when Krishna decided to come to this world from Goloka, he told Srimati Radharani, I'm going to descend to the world. They were come together. She said, but I will not be happy without the forest of Vrindavan, with the hill of Govardhan, and with the river Yamuna. Krishna said, I have already sent them to the world. So the Yamuna River is descended from Goloka Vrindavan, as has the forest of Vrindavan and as has the hill Govardhan. And Saraswati, that holy river, that Srila Vyasadev, presided by Saraswati herself, they all come together at this Triveni Sangam. And in one sense, they've come together to attract holy people from all directions together. And by bathing in the congregational chanting and the holy names with such saintly people, not only can we become purified, but we could be instruments to purify the whole world. And by Srila Prabhupada's instruction, that is why we have come to Kumbh Mela. The Namamrita, to distribute the nectar of all nectar, the nectar of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. And 500 years ago approximately, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met with Rupa Goswami at Prayag in the month of Magh, and instructed the whole world for all time to come through Rupa Goswami for 10 days at the Dasaswamedha Ghat. And if I'm given another opportunity to speak, we can discuss this most divine of all subjects. Thank you very much.